And we are back. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Daily Dots. And I am joined, as always, by the Brain Trust, Mr. Chase Taylor. another rally day. Kind of expected based on last week. Where NASDAQ finished up 1.57, S&P finished up 1.2. Where'd IWM, where'd the Russell finish up?
Up 1.67, and Mag 7 basically up 2%. Equal weight lagged a little bit today, only up 0.89. 2-year yield was down about 5 basis points, and the long end was pretty flat. 30-year was up 1, so.
So I kind of feel like today was all about that PMI report.
Yes, and so specifically the S&P PMI, which today they released both manufacturing and services, and then the composite, which is just the two of them. Normally, Wall Street does not care about S&P PMIs. They're actually relatively new to that game. Just they don't really move the market. And this morning, it really moved the market. Bond yields went from up to down. The dollar went from kind of flat to down a good bit. Like, it was very interesting, and I was kind of taken aback by that because normally it just doesn't move anything. But then dig into it and you realize the services employment metric was the worst since the GFC outside of COVID. So it was at November of 2009 levels. So yet another piece of soft data suggesting services employment is, you know, flat at best, I would say. We haven't seen that bleed into hard data, you know, the actual jobs report, but it's starting to feel, I would say, more and more likely that that could happen in the future, unless this was just, you know, a one-off. We had a pretty big nasty one in ISM services, and then it kind of came back. So we'll see how it goes, but the market definitely took it very seriously, and that really ignited stocks and brought yields in the dollar down.
Yeah, I just... if you even whisper rate cut, you know this market's going to take off. It really isn't surprising to me. It does crack me up though how market doesn't seem to really care too much about rates going up anymore. But if there's even a wind of them going down, you're going to see a rally. This one isn't really shocking though, just because, you know, in this market, you're down 6% one week, you're going to get a bounce.
Yeah, I mean, just naturally. And we haven't even, you know,
we haven't even got back above the 50-day moving averages yet.
We haven't gotten back to the 50 days. We haven't retraced, you know, 50%. We're at more like 38% of the move lower that we've retraced. So we haven't really done anything yet. But that's what makes these markets real tough. When something goes straight up or straight down, like managing it from that point forward is just very hard. Just like gold. I mean, gold went straight up. So then it starts pulling back and you're like, oh, well, I have no idea where it's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever you're 5 miles from the 200-day moving average, anything can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Little interesting thing. So we've had a nice run. I still have scars from saying this. Yeah. And I was never even shorted, and never in a way that lost money anyway. I think I've made a little bit of money, but we were short Tesla for about the last couple months.
Yeah. Last few weeks,
made about 20% on that trade, and we cut it in half today going into earnings.
Yeah. And cut it more than in half from kind of our peak position.
Yeah. It's been a nice position for us. I think our position size at the close today was like 1%.
Yeah, literally.
The portfolio. Yeah. What did we see? I saw Tesla is flying after hours.
Yeah. So it closed up 1.8% on the day, and now it's up about 5.5% after hours. This one's fun because they missed on earnings. They missed on revenues. They had the biggest revenue drop since 2012, down 9% year over year.
Jeez.
So what I think all this is there was a Reuters report recently that said, hey, like they're going to give up on doing this new affordable model and just go all in on the robo-taxi instead. Well, in earnings today, they're saying like, oh, no, like, not only are we still going to do the affordable car, but like we're going to do it faster than we originally said. So I think the market is just happy that they're going to do this more affordable car.
Only in this market. Would you get multiple expansion on earnings on a company at that valuation? That's just absurd.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that, you know, the Model 3 was supposed to be the affordable car to begin with. But, and I, And I don't know.
You mean the $29,000 Model 3 that right. was supposed to be the, yeah.
And I don't know this to be the case at all, but I just a basic assumption. I struggle to see margins being really strong on the more affordable model.
There's no way.
I don't know anything really about anyways, but.
There's no way.
Yeah. So I find it interesting. This is supposed to be a mega growth company. Their sales are down 9% year over year.
Still trading at what
margins have been more than cut in half from the top.
We have 45 times earnings here or something like that.
Yeah, no clue, but it's high.
Yeah. It's still
just interesting, but it may well rally right back up into some big technical areas that, you know, were big support that might become big resistance now.
Yeah. I'm just not afraid of fading this thing anymore. I hope it does get a good rally, 'cause I'd love to short it again.
Yeah, that was the idea when we took took some of that heat off, was to put it back on if it goes rallying back up to the levels we think are.
The one thing I will say, and I'm not trying to dog on anybody here, you always have to be careful with this name, because it has the most, in my opinion, uneducated, financially ignorant shareholder class of any company I've ever seen of that size.
And short interest is at a 3-year high, meaning a lot of people might have to run for the hill. So you could bounce higher than it makes sense just on that combo of the true fans buying and the true haters having to cover their shorts.
I will say, though, it's been kind of funny reading through Tesla Twitter. There's a lot of crying in the beer.
Yeah, I mean, the 65% drawdown will do that to you.
Oh, geez. And these people that with all this pride, I'm all in Tesla. And you're like, you're all in idiocy. That's just – and guys, like, this is why you don't do that. I mean, I'm assuming most of the people who listen to the show probably know that. But when somebody looks at you and go, and don't tell me about Druckenmiller and Soros, because you're not Druckenmiller and you're not Soros, right? When you go all in on one stock.
They never even did that. So
no. Well, I mean, he.
They put big positions on, but it's not like it was 90 plus percent of their net worth or something. That's what a lot of these Tesla people really do.
Break the bank, though. That when they broke the bank, England, they were running 250% size of their portfolio in that trade.
But if you listen to him, he said, I didn't know if the trade would work. I just knew it couldn't go against me.
Yeah.
So the risk reward would, like.
It's beautiful.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not going to go against me.
We've had a couple of those. I think I wasn't as strongly into it as you were at the time, but that was kind of a similar sentiment that we felt toward oil coming out of COVID.
Yeah, it turns out when things go negative, it's hard for them to keep going down.
Yeah, biggest mistake I made looking back on that one is just not buying it with both hands.
But I still remember viscerally the sentiment back then. I save the receipts from like IEA, some of these outfits that were, you know, publishing their demand estimates for like 2030 and stuff. I mean, the level of idiocy. But it was complete consensus that oil is like dead. We wouldn't even need it pretty soon. Like the sentiment could not have been more bombed out.
Oh yeah. Oh no. We were going into Kathy Wood's reality at $12 oil.
Their 2030 demand, global demand forecast was for oil demand to be under 100 million barrels. We're already well above that. Like, just kind of insane stuff that they were putting out at that time.
What else did we see? I thought the PMI report was interesting. It'll be interesting to see if there's any follow through, because like you were pointing out on our investment call this morning, the soft data has just continually been way off from the hard data. Yep. It's something we really don't have an answer as to why, right?
There's some pet theories, but no great answers, I don't think. At the end of the day, soft data has been bad for 2 years and hard data has been great for 2 years, and the hard data has been the one that's been right.
I continue to lean on the idea that I think that this backdrop is so unique and so outside of any historical norms that it's really tripping up a lot of that.
Yeah. Data. So is like crazy, but so are things like political polarization.
Yeah.
If you look at NFIB and UMISH and these different surveys, like as soon as there's an election, so all the small business people and NFIB go back to when Trump won, they all just like felt so much better about the economy. As soon as Biden won, they're like, oh, the economy sucks.
Well, right.
No, but okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like just silly stuff, even like that, like kind of skews some of the data at times.
Yeah.
But it, you know, you go from 3-4% nominal growth to 6-7% nominal growth, what feels like a bit of a downturn for your business, it may not be, you know, compared to what it used to be.
Do you get the feeling, you and I have talked about this a little bit, well, and I know your sentiment, but I remember watching one of the most recent Druckenmiller interviews, probably aired at some point over the last 6 months. And he made a comment like he doesn't see any fat pitches in this market. I could not have agreed with him more at that point, and I see substantially less now. I don't think – nothing looks easy here. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't have agreed with you 3, 6, 2, 1 months ago.
Yeah, but agreed.
At the very moment, I feel like my moorings are like kind of shaken loose. Like I'm getting to a point where like I'm becoming more open to the economy starting to slow back down a little bit. I'm more open to even inflation like backing off from this 3 months of pretty significant heat. And that obviously just muddies the macro waters, the investment waters, like all of it. The one thing that to me is most clear at the moment is like, and now the dollar's come off a decent amount today, obviously on this, but like, unless you get real follow through from the hard data, that's weak. Like if you get another round of hot data and the Fed comes out hawkish next week, even incrementally so, like you're right back to the dollar ripping. Like the ECB is like, they're going straight Oprah on cuts now. Like yeah. they're like, there's going to be a cut for like every meeting. Like they're getting serious about cuts while we're like looking at our data. Like, yeah, we don't know if we can even cut. Forget like, let's do three. Like we don't know if we can do one.
What kind of deficits is the UK running? You know,
I actually bumped into this the other day. They have really brought their deficit lower. Like they really trimmed that thing, like borderline austerity kind of stuff. In the last like year, they've tightened it up substantially.
That's wild. That's wild. So it makes sense that they're looking at needing to cut and we're not.
Well, so you said UK. So like if we go Europe wide, man, it's just so it varies. So like France is running a giant, I mean, giant deficit.
Bigger than us?
No, but they're running like 5% of GDP, I think. Oof. You know, but then like a lot of the rest of Western Europe is running it pretty tight. But that's why we're able to just keep growing and we just can't get rid of our inflation is because we're running it so hot where they're not. So I think that's really, you know, why that's at the epicenter of this whole dollar strength is like inflation backed away for everybody else except us. It won't go away for us. But well, yeah, like we're running this huge deficit and not just like any old deficit, like to just run by, you know, Medicare or something like. It's building stuff and putting people to work. Like it's like real stuff. That's economic activity, not just like grandma's pills.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're doing that too.
Oh yeah. That's not going anywhere.
No, we're doing it on all fronts, man.
Grandma's pills doesn't do the same thing for the economy as like building a you know, $10 billion chip factory.
Doesn't have quite the multiplier effect. Let's put it that way. No. Jeez. It's wild to listen to that, especially when you realize that we are far more fiscally profligate than France is. It's just wild. It's a wild realization.
A close horse race these days. So they're getting after it.
And then listening to them take it, but then also listening them to go far to the right with us in terms of educational policy, how they're getting rid of all the woke stuff out of schools. It's just fascinating to see this where I'm, you know, for my entire life, like whatever we were doing, you know, France was out there, like, you know, out there in the outfield picking out daisies and doing ridiculous stuff. It's just funny to see now we seem to be much more the profligate player than they are. And they're still running a massive deficit. I agree. But it's just kind of wild to see them exercise.
For them, as soon as they start talking about, you know, cutting something, there's a million people in the street like burning stuff. So like it's proven difficult for them to cut spending. Not that it would be that different here, but that's a national pastime. It's like a sport there, you know, to protest. So
yeah. Well, they should go to Ivy League.
Here we're like at least annoyed if we have to go protest. I think they just enjoy it there.
Well, except for the kids on college campuses.
Yeah, they're having a good time.
They're having a great time.
Taking over Columbia.
Well, what else did we see? Anything else today of note?
New home sales came in pretty strong. That was maybe notable. There was Philly services and Richmond manufacturing. All that stuff is like basically where it's been the last few months. So not in my opinion, nothing to report. One last thing I'll mention was we talked about it this morning and Marcos brought it up. Bob Lighthizer, who will likely be on Trump's team again, and even if not, will influence policy. He's at the what is it called? The America First Institute or whatever.
Okay.
Talking openly about like the fact that Trump team is kind of trying to figure out ways to devalue the dollar as a matter of policy. Obviously that doesn't matter if Trump doesn't win, but if he does, that may be significant. I will caution people though. I think a lot of people forgot, but his team openly talked about that while he was president.
Like, yeah.
So it's not like that's new, but he sometimes like with the second term stuff, I just feel like maybe his team is like last time we kind of backed away from some of the edgier policy. This time, like, who cares? Whatever. This is like our last chance. So like, let's just do it.
Well, the other thing too is the fiscal. I mean, look at the backdrops from when he got elected. I mean, it's just completely different.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, you have a 10-year period of time where I think the average citizen's expectation, or excuse me, 8-year period of time, where the average citizen's expectation of both the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government in the event of an economic slowdown or that the expectation has completely changed, right? Like, in a period of time where everybody should be concerned about debts and deficits, more so than any point, like, right? Like, we've crossed over the lines that guys were warning about like 40 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And we've truly crossed over lines of no return. And I think that, and this kind of goes to our point, which is, you know, if you're out there talking about a Trump presidency being getting our fiscal house in order, it ain't going to happen.
Oh, not yet. Not even.
Well, because you can't. And I was explaining this to a client that I go, look, if your expectation is for a politician to come in here and quote unquote, clean things up financially, they're going to deal with a massive recession, period. Like, you don't get out of this without a massive recession.
Right.
If you normalize deficits, you're going into recession and it's probably going to be pretty serious.
You can do it with inflation and you get to keep your job, or you can do it with taxes and you don't get to keep your job. That's kind of the way I see it.
Right. Yep. And
typically people want their job.
Yeah.
That's why typically governments do it with inflation instead of taxes. It's like the same process. Like, the government gave a whole bunch of money to the private sector. They're going to need some of it back. So you can, that's your two basic options for how you can get it back.
We just seem to be in a period of time though, where people are like, you know what? There's a third option. We can keep spending and not raise taxes. You know, like,
which is what both sides are
advocating. Yeah.
If you talk to Biden, it's like, well, we don't want to raise taxes, but we do want to, you know, jack up some spending. And if you talk to the other side, it's like, well, let's chill out with spending, but let's cut some taxes.
Yeah.
Like, right. Okay.
Right. No, I know. The same thing applies. Now, don't get me wrong. I would love nothing more than less taxes, because I feel like I'm getting taxed to death.
Well, you'll just get it back, but on the inflation side.
Well, hopefully we catch it. Or if they were ever to do that, hopefully.
But
catch
if you know what you're doing, side. Like, if you're, you know, cleverly positioned person in the citizenry, you can do just fine that way. Like, you go back and look at even like Weimar Germany, like there were like smart, thoughtful people that were paying attention to what happened, got really rich because they figured out how things were working, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Are there some interesting stories about that?
Oh, tons. Yeah.
I would like to dip into those. I've never read some of the financial
stories. Like When Money Dies, there's some really great books.
I've heard of that one.
Period.
Yeah. What was the primary? Were they short in the currency?
I know. Like, really is more about buying like productive assets, honestly. Like,
really?
Not crazy stuff. I mean, some of it, yeah, like pure speculation and, but also like.
I would have bet the opportunity set was similar to like, post Cold War Soviet collapse, I would think that, you know, like, but what's his name? Red Notice, Bill, that was a phenomenal book. He went in there and just mopped up. Right.
There's a few guys that did,
What's
his name? Jim Leitner actually went and was buying things on auction at courthouses and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That Bill guy was taking in hard cash and he was buying up those IOUs that they were giving everybody.
Gosh, yeah.
And buying them for pennies on the dollar.
It's mind-blowing looking back on it that they let that they let Americans come in and do that. Now, obviously, like they
needed capital, right? I mean,
their elite class went and stole most of it and bought most of it for pennies on the dollar. Like that's how they all became oligarchs.
Oligarchs, right? But, yeah.
It still blows my mind that like they, like there's no way in the world, like if China had to go through something similar, they would let Americans come in and be like, cool, I'll take a controlling interest in Alibaba for like, you know, $100 and a pack of gum.
Yeah. Bill Browder was his name. Yeah. Browder. Yeah. That was a great story. For those of you that haven't read it, go get that book, Red Notice. Anyway, that's about it for today. Do we have anything else coming up interesting this week?
Yep. But nothing tomorrow, but we'll have a Q1 GDP on Thursday. That would be interesting. A
lot of good earnings announcements coming out this week that should provide pretty good indicators. Would I be wrong to say again? It just feels to me like things are cooling a little bit.
You mean the economy?
Yeah, it feels like it. Yeah, I don't want to be over.
I feel the same. Like on the edges. Like it doesn't.
Yeah, not.
It,
yeah,
it feels big yet, but like it just. And none of the hard data has backed it up yet, but like some of the soft data has been enough to just kind of make you feel like, I don't know, something might be starting to change. The biggest thing, like, I mean, hey, financial conditions tightened up a good bit here in the last like few weeks. So it makes sense that it's time for things to back off some.
You know who's still out there pounding the table talking about lag effects are coming and it's still going to be hell to pay is Spitznagel. He's still, and that's not a guy that it's not a guy you want to fade.
No, I'm a huge fan. So
yeah, well, he started talking about pine cones and forest fires.
That's where I got my name from. So
it was a good book. All right, pal. Well, thank you guys for joining us. We will be back tomorrow again. Got more earnings reports coming out before the bell. I think right now it's kind of back to a little bit semblance of normal. I think looking at earnings and looking at interest rate cut expectations. I mean, that's kind of the game. So we'll keep chronicling it every single day, and hopefully you'll continue to take that trip with us. Until tomorrow, we'll see you then. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.